Good afternoon. It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds, in for Bill Radke. Our top story today, facial recognition software in schools. Listen and share your thoughts by tweeting to @KUOW. Facial recognition is being piloted right now at one Seattle school through software called SAFER, that's S-A-F-R, at the University Child Development School. Parents of children register their faces, and they can unlock a gate by smiling at a surveillance camera. One of those parents is Rob Glazer. He's the founder of Real Networks, the company that created the software. His kids currently attend the University Child Development School. Rob, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Ross, good to talk to you today.
What's the goal?
The goal is safer schools, would I guess be the short answer. There's obviously a personal element of this for me, and there's also a broader societal element, and there's a commercial element as well. So this is sort of a combination of these three things. Our company, Real Networks, had been working on a product to do facial recognition, which became SAFER. We've been working on it for about 2 years. And last fall, towards into winter, we were starting to get ready to do some tests and trials, and we did them in a number of different commercial places. And literally one day, as I was dropping my boys off at school, I noticed they had a new gate that they'd put up. And so I went inside and talked to a couple of administrators I knew, and I found out that this gate had cameras associated with it, and that the woman, primarily a woman named Angie, who's been with the school for a number of years and knows most of the parents and knows pretty much everybody in the community, Angie's used the camera to identify people. And so I asked innocently, what happens when Angie's on a break or when she's out sick that day? And they said, we don't really know. And I said, well, we've been creating some technology for face recognition. We've been looking for a number of different good uses for this. And would you like to try it in the school? And so I ended up hearing a series of conversations, and ultimately the school decided, yes, it did want to try it. And so we provided the software, as you normally do in a test, for free. And the community embraced it and had a very positive experience with it. And that was sort of percolating along. And then about 2 months later, the tragedy of Parkland happened. And as a parent, and you know, you feel this in your bones, in your gut, whenever one of these tragedies happens. And I have a number of different thoughts, as a lot of people do, about different ways to make school safer. And personally, you know, I'm a personal advocate of sensible gun control and other things. But it seemed to me we had something that actually we could make useful, not just for the school that my kids were going to, and not just for, you know, commercial customers we could get in other markets, but potentially for every school in the country. So we began talking to schools around the country, and it really struck a chord. So we thought, well, let's actually flip this around and say, you know, let's not make the basic product the right focus of our commercial efforts. Let's offer it for free to any school in the country.
Rob, is there an if-then argument for facial recognition in schools? If there was facial recognition, would a shooting have been avoided?
You know, those hypotheticals are super tricky. We decided to call the product SAFER, not, for instance, SAFE. Anybody who tells you that they have a magical way to ensure safety is certainly overpromising. To me, the test is a more subtle one, which is, are we taking a positive step here that could increase safety probabilistically in many cases? And are we doing something that is actually something that the community accepts and feels okay about and hopefully even feels good about? And if the answer to those two questions are yes, then that's, to me, all you have to know in trying to do a statistical analysis of this event or that event, which ones would have been stopped, which ones would have been slowed, which ones wouldn't have been affected. I'm sure that some social scientists will want to do that, but from my standpoint, it's about how do we make incremental steps forward and create a social consensus around those.
Now, as I understand it, at the school here in Seattle, it's parents who are registering and their facial pictures are being taken so that the software can figure out whether they are parents or not. Are all parents participating?
No, the school set it up, I think, very sensibly as an optional opt-in program, and I think that's a good way to go. So if you want to wait for Angie to recognize you and you're not in the system, you're free to do that. And the system is not necessarily applicable for every parent, because during the morning hours, the way the school seems to run, I don't work for the school, but I've taken kids there for 8 years. If you come at the 20-minute window when they've got people at the gate is open, those staff recognize people, and everything's fine. If you come at the 20-minute window at the end of the day, that's the same. But if you come in the middle of the day, your kid has to go to a doctor's appointment, you have to drop something off, the kid forgot their lunch, whatever is going on in the middle of the day, that's when the system comes in. So that scenario doesn't apply intensively to every parent, and so different parents decide whether they wanted to opt in or not, and as my understanding is, about half of them did, which shocked me. I thought it would be maybe a quarter or a third.
Now, it's not being used on students yet, as I understand it, but if it is, how do you integrate a face recognition system that won't make the students feel as though they're under suspicion?
Well, I think if you look at the kind of school, in a grammar school, and the oldest kids at UCDS are 11 or 12, in a grammar school where the kids are as little as 3 or 4 and 12, kids are being picked up and dropped off. So there doesn't seem to be a use case, at least not that this particular grammar school found, to do any facial recognition for kids. So that's the simplest answer. In a lot of cases, for instance, grammar schools, it'll just be about adults. Now when you get to middle schools or high schools, it gets a little more subtle. We don't have any deployments yet in that regard. We literally just announced the product 2 days ago. But I can tell you from conversations we're having, for instance, with the state of Wyoming, and the governor of Wyoming had something nice to say about our product, and the CIO of Wyoming had something nice. They're looking at schools that are schools that have older kids in them. And I don't know whether they're thinking they're going to have a phase where they use it for the kids, so the kids who can come and go, basically it's equivalent to having like an ID card, or whether they're thinking of it in a way that's more like the grammar school. But I think that's going to be something that every school thinks about the needs of their community, thinks about the appropriateness. You know, just like anything else, when your kid wants to play soccer, the parent has to sign a form that says, I know there's injury risk for my kid. So I'm assuming, and there's a lot of regulation that still has to come, in my opinion, that if your kid comes in and says, hey, you know, I want, you know, is my picture going to be in the school yearbook? Some parent has to sign off for that. And similarly, for a system like this, I'm assuming that parents would have the right to opt in or not to whether their kids are going to be registered in the system.
I'm talking to Rob Glazer of Real Networks. He's giving away some software that provides facial recognition to schools around the country. Rob, you're giving away the software. How expensive is it to get the hardware to utilize SAFER, this system?
Well, it depends on the school. In the case of UCDS, because they had just put the camera in, the existing cameras they had worked fine, and they had to do a small amount of work. I don't know what it cost them, you know, a couple hundred dollars to wire the thing that opens the door to the computer that they connected up with it. So it was fairly inexpensive for them. Typically, what you'd need is a pretty new camera. You'd need probably something like an iPad as a registration kiosk, and you need a computer, a Macintosh or a Windows computer, to run the software. So that would be the minimal hardware cost. And then it would just depend on how many cameras you wanted to add. If you didn't have wiring already for the cameras, you'd have to add some wiring for that. And so it's quite scalable up to, you know, start with a very small amount of money up to a significant amount of money.
Rob, you've said you agree we can overdo school surveillance. Why doesn't this qualify as overdoing school surveillance?
Well, hopefully we're starting a dialogue at several levels of our society. We're starting a dialogue at the level of individual schools, at the level of school boards, at the level of, you know, states, at the level of the federal government, as to not just for schools, but specifically for schools, what's the right way to design these systems that enhances safety and does not overdo surveillance. I mean, you know, in my view, I don't want to live in a dystopian world where you walk down the street and you have no privacy. Don't want that at all. It's not my belief that these technologies inherently lead to that, but it certainly is my belief that if these technologies are deployed in an unfettered way, that could happen. So I think we have to have a debate. And Brad Smith, the president of Microsoft, by coincidence, we didn't know it was coming, last Friday wrote a brilliant piece about the need for government regulation in this technology, not just for schools, but for the country as a whole. I believe in that. I've said it in an interview or two, I'm a card-carrying member of the ACLU, and I have been for 30 years. So to me, civil liberties are incredibly important. Privacy is one of the civil liberties that's incredibly important. And having the right balance to strike so that you know when you're going into a place that's being monitored, you know it, there's signage. If you're registered in the system, in almost all cases, that would be an opt-in type thing. Those, to me, are the kinds of table stakes, but there's a lot more to do besides that.
Rob Glazer, stay with us. We also have on the line Rachel Levinson-Waldman. Rachel's senior counsel to the Brennan Center's Liberty and National Security Program. Thank you for joining us, Rachel.
Thanks so much for having me.
What are your thoughts on having facial recognition technology in schools?
Yeah, so, you know, I'll say I am also a parent of young children, so I absolutely appreciate Rob's concern about safety, and I really hear what he's saying about clearly his concern for and kind of attention to civil liberties and privacy. You know, when we're thinking about facial recognition in schools, I think there's sort of writ large two different kinds of systems, and then a lot of breakdown within those. One is what Rob is talking about, right, which is facial recognition sort of at the entrance to a school. Another, which it doesn't sound like is being rolled out here, is facial recognition inside a school, which I think raises a whole host of other issues. So when we're talking about facial recognition you know, at in entrance, right? This, you know, parents are opting in, they have their faces scanned. It sounds like in part it's a matter of convenience. I think really the question is, you know, at the very beginning, the question was, what was the goal? What's the concern? What's the problem that the technology is solving? So if there could be a concern simply about convenience and about sort of what to do, you know, during those times when, you know, as we're hearing, maybe the security guard steps away. So at those points, you know, is there nobody who's sort of acting as that frontline security? You know, if parents are opting into this, they're choosing to have their pictures taken, children aren't being scanned. At that point, what I would think about is, you know, obviously, is this the way that schools want to spend their resources? But I hear that at least in terms of this one, it's free or largely free, potentially depending to some extent on what hardware is already in place. And then I think what I'd really want to think about is some of the issues that kind of attach to facial recognition. So for instance, accuracy, right? We know that a lot of facial recognition systems tend to be quite accurate on white men. That's where a lot of what we call the training data comes from. That's what these technologies are trained on. Less accurate for women, less accurate for people of color. And so even when you see an aggregate percentage of high accuracy, that percentage doesn't necessarily apply to everyone equally, right? So this technology might work differently for different people who are trying to get in.
Yeah, I want to follow up on that. There was a research paper done recently about surveillance and security of students, and it found that schools with more students of color were between 12 to 18 times more likely to adopt strict surveillance like metal detectors and things like this. Rob, do you worry about the use of your software or perhaps over application of your software in a racial way?
Well, I'd say a few things about that. Yes, as a citizen who believes that we need to have a stronger effort to have racial equality in our country, I worry about any technology that would inhibit that or even take us backwards or any use of the technology. We've done some things with SAFER to minimize and perhaps in some cases even eliminate the way the technology could be used in a way that would be deleterious. For instance, we don't do any ethnic or racial identification. Many systems do, and there are algorithms that you can use for that. But we decided we don't want that in our software. So we do gender, we do age, we do a sentiment. We can talk about that. You mentioned the smiling on the way in the door. It's a way to kind of provide some kind of extra authentication, and there may be some other good uses for it. But we don't do ethnicity or race because we, in our view, there were too many pernicious use cases around that, and we didn't want to get involved in that. But that's only a start. I definitely see. I think Rachel's analysis of the difference between a perimeter system like how SAFER is being used and a full-on surveillance system in all the classrooms, etc. Those are two different things. I mean, that's like the difference between a race car and a truck, right? Yeah. They both have internal combustion engines and four wheels, or at least four wheels, but they're totally different. And so, in my view, the use case that we're focusing on is one that's focusing on safety and security, and you know, using the technology, the category of technology. You can overdo it for sure. That's kind of what we're talking about.
Rachel Levinson Waldman, bottom line, Rob has kids in this school. He's provided this software to it. You're a parent with kids in school. What would you feel about if they were putting this facial recognition technology in your kid's school?
So here's what I would want to know if it were going into my school. First, is it opt-in, right? Can parents choose, you know, whether or not to participate or not? It sounds like in this circumstance they can. And then also, more in fact about the accuracy. I hear the point that it's not doing prediction, but I think that's a different matter from whether it accurately matches white faces, faces of color as much as it does white faces. I think also I'd want to know what policy guidelines are there, right? So if the system is doing scanning, is it retaining that information? Under what circumstances? What protections? What encryption are there? Other protections around that quite sensitive data, right? Face prints, face IDs are increasingly valuable. And so wanting to know what protections are in place for those. Are there audits that are occurring of, you know, how the system is being used, if in fact any of it is being retained, who can go back and look at that and under what circumstances? And relatedly, what are the policies and restrictions around access for law enforcement, right? If it's being retained, if law enforcement comes and says, we want to know who's entering at a particular time, what's the kind of bar in place for that in terms of getting some sort of court order or oversight? And then the final thing is some kind of regular community review. So I think one of the concerns here, and you know, Rob mentioned sort of this concern about, you know, we don't want to walk into a dystopian society. surveillance systems, surveillance technologies have a way of proliferating and have a way of being used originally for one purpose and then kind of creeping into more and more purposes, right, once they sort of become normalized. So if there's then a push for, well, right now this data isn't being retained, but maybe down the line it's going to, or right now it's just for entry, but maybe there's a school that's interested in then deploying it inside the school, at each of those points, having expert and community review and input.
Hey, Rob, you've said that the data from local servers at the school it's in now isn't shareable, but in the future, could it be? And what kind of, how would you address those privacy concerns?
I agree completely with Rachel. There needs to be policies at several levels. There needs to be policies at the individual school level. There needs to be policies at the school district level, at the state level, and at the federal level. And there needs to be a dialogue among all the stakeholders. In the case of schools, the students, and they're older, the parents for sure, the administrators, civic leaders, privacy experts, to figure out, okay, what should the rules of the road be? I think Rachel's describing a very sensible sort of framework and set of considerations that should be in place. So we intend to follow up on that. We literally, you know, we launched the product 2 days ago, and I think we launched it in a way that sets it up on a positive arc, but we have hard work to do to keep it on a positive arc and to steer it away from some of the more pernicious or deleterious potential extrapolations if we weren't vigilant.
Rob and Rachel, thank you very much for your time. Rob Glaser, founder of Real Networks, their new software, SAFR, Safer, is facial recognition for schools. It's being piloted here in Seattle. By the way, the Real Networks Foundation is a contributor to KUOW. Also with us, Rachel Levinson-Waldman, senior counsel to the Brennan Center's Liberty and National Security Program. It's The Record. More tech news in a moment. Facebook plans to release 1 million gigabytes of user information to a researcher. Wait, I think I heard this one. I'm Ross Reynolds, in for Bill Radke.